Let's begin now.
And welcome in the After Hours. Jay Binkley, no dust man tonight. He'll be next time. The Royals are off tonight before the major series in Cleveland. Grant, my man Grant Nicholson here. Mr. K-State, Mr. Super Regional Kansas State Baseball in action against Virginia. How about that, Grant, all smiles, rocking his K-State baseball gear.
Dude, Bat Cats, baby. Let's go.
I know. You excited? You a baseball fan or just when the Cats do well? Did you go to a lot of games when you were at in Manhattan?
I didn't go to very many. I probably went to one or two a year, and we did a few for the radio there. But
it'd be a lot of fun being at Kansas State baseball games. College baseball games are a lot of fun.
They weren't very good when I was in school. They'd been good right before I was in school, and they weren't that good when I was there.
It's a lot of fun going, though.
Yeah, dude, it's super fun.
But you're going to go to Omaha if they make it.
If they make it, I'm going to go to Omaha. I'm going to do my absolute best.
And they have that bar up there, right? When like the LSU fans like shattered the record, it's like every time you do a shot at this particular, I don't remember what the bar's name is.
I don't know the name either, but you do the Jello shots, right?
Jello shots, yeah. That's what it is. And then you mark down which team you're representing. But LSU like made a mockery of the record. It was incredible. But Kansas State, I have no doubt, would be high on that list.
But
depends on how far they go. But I guarantee Kansas State fans, they know how to party. They know what to do.
Even just for one or two games, I think we'd put up a valiant effort.
Oh, I think so, too. I think Kansas State fans would be primed for this. People are excited about it.
And you've seen a three-hour drive?
Yeah, you've seen how Kansas State fans travel for football. They love that program. You guys are a dedicated fan base, and I appreciate you guys.
We don't need much of an excuse to go all out for anything. So,
no, you don't. You've been following the Royals? I know you've been doing some Royals producing for Vern and everything like that. You've been keeping up on the Royals every night?
Yeah, I mean, who's not following the Royals? Everyone's in.
What does it remind you of? You're younger, so younger generation. You did, you know, grow up some when the Royals did not win. And they won in 14 and 15. Well, you were at K-State, right, when they won in 15?
Yeah.
So you were able to be in college. So you obviously, it became kind of a big deal. 14, I assume you were there as well?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, so 14 and 15, you're in Manhattan.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, that's the only other time where the Royals were really good that I can have a vivid memory of. So it's obviously reminiscent of that 14-15 kind of run that they're on. So it's just a lot of fun to be around. It's fun to be like watching the games, and they actually matter.
Yeah, we'll have Vern on at 7 o'clock, our Royals insider. We'll talk old things Royals with him, Pete Sweeney of Arrowhead Pride. A Chiefs insider joins us at 6:30, so a little Chiefs and Royals times we mix it. But back to the Royals, it became an every night thing for you. I don't know. I mean, you're obviously busy in college. I know personally I was doing the day shift with Henry. Like, we were following every single night, and you were talking about every night. Hell, I went to Kauffman Stadium probably 60 to 65 times a year between like 2013, 2019. I mean, it was like 6 years. That was just where I hung out. It's where I went. It was always at Kauffman Stadium, and I did that Royals Insider there for a while. But obviously, we watched it every single night and took calls from people that watched and listened every single night. And I feel like this year has kind of become that. I think the fans have really started to buy into what they're doing. It took them a while. They're still not wholly buying into it when it comes to, you know, going out and filling the stadium up. National media loves this team. They're starting to talk about them a lot more. I understand they had a little bit of a slide there. They lost 6-7, but they were able to win against San Diego the last game there, and that was huge for them before they go into this major series against Cleveland.
It's a huge series. We were talking about it before we went on air. I mean, this is the games that you need to win if you want to have a serious shot at making the playoffs.
No question about it. You know, four games. You got them seven times, Cleveland. You haven't played Cleveland all this year, 13 games. This feels big. And I don't care if you're just looking at this thing and say, well, the Royals are 8-14 against teams with winning records. So, I mean, you only play who you play. Are they going to improve this team? Yes. Will they improve this team at the deadline with the bullpen? I think they will. They're always going to be satisfied with what they have in the outfield with Renfro and Melendez. I feel that they'll change that. You have to feel how good you are when it becomes June. And if you're competitive and you're ready to roll, hey, they're already 61 games into the season. You get to June, everybody, you know, points to June. We'll talk to Vern, you know, getting to June. What do you think? The Royals, you kind of are what you are. And I remember Vern got married because Mike Moustakas hit 300 by June 1st. Like, how big June 1st has become.
Well, and it's also like when you start facing teams at the top of the division like this, obviously we played the Twins quite recently, but you may not have to have a winning record against a team like Cleveland, but you should be at the 5-6 win mark against these guys if you want to be a real contender.
Well, and that was big for after losing two to San Diego to come back and win that game. Carrington Harrison has Denny Matthews on each and every week. The legend Denny's basically, he's called every Royals game since the beginning of time. I mean, he's awesome. But he asked him a question about that, how big that game was. Did it feel bigger than just being a regular season game against the Padres?
Mentally, if nothing else, because you're playing a pretty good team. That's a good lineup, San Diego. And you figure out a way to win the final game of the series in the last inning of the series. And going into Cleveland, and obviously the Royals haven't seen Cleveland yet, and they've been playing really well. That was good mentally, and I'm sure that the day off was welcomed, and now they can go into Cleveland refreshed with the knowledge that, and I mentioned it on the air, I said this team never quits, they're never out of a game, and they proved it again as late as you can possibly prove it.
And I think that's what people like about the teams in this town. I mean, you see a lot from the Chiefs, don't you? They're down 10 points going in the fourth quarter all the time. They come back and win. And you think about the Royals in 14 and 15, it was about coming back and winning. And Denny Matthews was asked about that never say die attitude that the Royals possess. And I think the fan base really enjoys that type of spirit from the Royals.
It's a mindset, and it's a togetherness as a team, a belief in the guy next to you that he's going to do something. And so to get a rally started, he just did something, now I got to do something, and the guy behind me will do something. And that's how it evolves, and that's what happens. And you just have the belief that you can just battle as hard as you can for as long as you can. You may come up short, as they did Friday night. But then in the ninth inning yesterday, they did not come up short. They came up with a win.
And they've built that cushion. I understand, like, Cleveland does not have a tough schedule right now. I mean, it starts to even itself out just a little bit. They don't right now. The Royals do. Obviously, we know the Royals next couple weeks. It's a tough schedule. Cleveland did lose on Sunday, so that was good. So both these teams, or they took a loss to the Royals for five games back. Now they're four games back going into a three-game series in Cleveland. But these fans don't quit either, says Denny.
Yeah, that was terrific. And we pointed out that the team doesn't quit. Well, Friday night, the fans didn't quit either. And that's what was really interesting to me. They hung with it. Almost everybody that was in the ballpark when the game started was there when the game ended. And that's encouraging, too. And that mindset of the fan is going to help the players in the long run. And the more they get behind them, the more enthusiastic they are, the better off everybody is.
And this pumps me up. I mean, it's so nice that they built that cushion so you can take a slide here and there. And it doesn't ultimately hurt you. You're still 11 games over 500. Like, there's, only 11 teams in baseball over 500? Royals still the seventh best record. I mean, it's tough, man. The daily grind. But you're in June now. I think people are finally starting to realize this team's for real. I always kind of likened it to the Chiefs' defense. People didn't buy into it, being a good defense right away. And nationally, the talk was, what's wrong with the Chiefs' offense? What's wrong with the Chiefs? They don't score like they used to. What's going on? But they were neglecting the fact that this defense is becoming an elite defense. The second best scoring defense in the NFL, a defense that got 57 sacks, that went 55 the year before, so they increased it even by two and finished second in the NFL, only behind what the 1989 Chiefs had, 60 sacks. But people didn't buy into it. Then finally, the postseason, they did. I think these fans starting to really buy into what these Royals are.
I think you're right. I mean, I don't know about you, but I know for the first, 2 months of the season, month and a half for sure, that I was kind of waiting for the Royals to show us who they really are.
And I think a lot of people did.
Because that's happened before where they get fooled with a hot start. Most of the time, it's the opposite for the Royals, but it can happen.
It can. Was there a certain point where you started buying into it? Was it getting to 15 games under? Was it that nice 8-game winning streak, that they possessed? And I was doing the Royals postgame for Vern, two of those games, so I get to see, just kind of the fans and how they were reacting during that.
Yeah, it's fun to just watch them be good for the games to matter. So much so in the last couple of years, you didn't watch individual games because it didn't have much impact on the end result of the season. But this is just as important as games in August and September.
No, it is. It's just fun. It's just fun to have relevant baseball. Like this series, and you're going to be part of it here. You're going to be working at Wednesday nights. So you're going to be just right there in the middle for what happens between the Royals and Cleveland. But I'm looking forward to talking to Vern about this at 7 o'clock about this team. But, yeah, I'm going to be watching the game tomorrow. I'm going to be huddled in front of the TV with friends. you know, just watch what's going on. It's fun. It makes it fun. Like, sports is fun for us all, but when the baseball team is good, it makes everything better, especially in the summer, because we have the Chiefs, you know, going to start their final group of voluntary OTAs this week. Then they got mandatory minicamp the next. Then it's shutdown time until they get ready for training camp. But the summer is going to be fun with this team. Here's Denny Matthews when he's on with Carrington about just how fun the summer is going to be.
I think everybody in the Kansas City area is with us because they are interesting. They're fun to watch, and they never give up. And that's the thing that is really, I think, getting the attention of all the fans. How this team is never out of a game, and they'll just keep fighting you until the last pitch, until the last strike, until the last out. And that's a great trait to have as an individual and as a team. And that's why they're going to be fun to watch. Are they going to be in the race the entire season? We hope so. They've got the ability to do it because of the great start they got off to. So they're going to have to keep it together and be consistent throughout the tough part of the schedule. You're going to have to battle some of the big boys now, and the Royals showed they're capable of that over the last weekend. So, tough part of the schedule coming up. They know it. They'll embrace it. They'll accept it, and I think they'll do fine.
5:40 tomorrow in Cleveland. Well, I welcome this stuff, man. I mean, this is fun. I mean, if you enjoyed the Chiefs and marching in the postseason and being in it, you know, you remember in 14, the Chiefs didn't make the playoffs that year. 15, both of them did. Both teams made it. The Chiefs played in it the following year, but it was that season of 2015 when the Royals won it. But having them both relevant and good at the same time is a good feeling. But being able to follow that baseball team each and every night and get excited about watching them and then being a good team, I mean, you're sitting here 4 games back from Cleveland. 4 games is it at this point. I mean, this team, I feel this team's making the postseason. I mean, as of right now, they'd be in the postseason. 100%, they'd be there.
I mean, the longer this goes, you get inching closer and closer to that feeling where, like, maybe not making the playoffs would be a disappointment. I don't know if we're there quite yet, but we're pretty close.
I mean, Baltimore sitting there at 37-20, the Royals 36-25, just one win behind Baltimore. But if you remember that Baltimore series, you know, Royals blew a couple games there. They blew a couple games because of their bullpen. Like, they were right there with Baltimore. I mean, if Baltimore gets the shine, they get to talk about, but right now they're both in the wild card.
Well, that's something that they've already talked about addressing is maybe sounds like they might, they're thinking about maybe being aggressive, trying to get some help. Maybe if it's a bullpen or an outfield bat or something.
From the 816, first time in 9 to 10 years where I get so impatient and agitated about Royals off days. LOL. Here's another one. It makes so much more fun when the Royals are good. It's like a Chiefs game every night. But only one problem is has a hard time watching because the app stops a lot. You can listen to it, though. You can listen to it on 610 Sports Radio and have fun doing it. We'll talk more about the series as we go on. Love to hear from you how much you're enjoying gathering, you know, and watching the Royals every night. Is it just background noise for you, or are you actually, you know, tuned in to what's going on? We'll talk about that. We have Josh Vernier at 7. But coming up next, we'll talk about somebody that seems to be getting a lot of unwanted attention, so to speak, next.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
Hey, welcome back. Jay Binkley, Grant Nicholson. Pete Sweeney joins us 6:30. Josh Vernier talking Kansas City Royals at 7. The Chiefs, by the way, do their last series of voluntary minicamp, June 4th through 7th. The mandatory minicamp is June 11th through 13th. You know, Lamar Jackson is like skipping the Ravens. This is after getting his like $270 million contract last year. Plaxico is blasting him on Carton Show and everything. Man, you quarterbacks, you got to show up, man. You got to show the leadership. That's why the world's been so much fun there. They have leadership, finally. They don't have it. You know who doesn't have leadership? Is the WNBA. And I can't believe I'm actually talking WNBA. I wouldn't think this day would ever come, but I will, because it's aggravating. It's completely aggravating. Caitlin Clark and what's going on, getting shoved down to the ground, listen, and then watching her teammates just watch her. I just like it at the football whenever I see it. Because when I see like her being knocked down to the ground in a flagrant situation, I think, okay, where was their teammates? Where were they? That's what drives me nuts. Like, being a football fan, like, Mahomes doesn't get touched, because if he does, you're going to deal with it. If Mahomes gets pushed after the whistle, Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, Joe Tooney, all those guys, John Taylor, all those guys going to be back there. Kelsey, you name it, going to be protecting Mahomes. If you're a hockey fan, which I am, you don't touch the stars. Why? Because then the goon comes out and will hit you and knock you down. But, hey, I heard Alex talking, and he's 100% right. Like, people are talking about the WNBA, and this time for bad reasons because of what's going on with Kate, all the jealousy. I just can't imagine it. That sport is because of her, man. That's the only reason sports radio talks about it. Sure, do they have other stars? But no one gives a damn, to be honest with you. They don't. You know, you only realize who hit her. It's they want to see Caitlin Clark. And they're flying on charters now on road games. A lot of it, the impetus is Caitlin Clark, even though they started it last year when they had the back-to-back games. Now it's like every game to do it. Man, just deal with it, man. She's bringing in money. I saw the same kind of petty jealousy with the PGA Tour when Tiger Woods got good. And then when Tiger Woods fell, when he had his problems with his wife, right? And then everybody was like, okay, let's make fun of Tiger Woods now. Like his downfall. And then people were celebrating it, some of them. I was like, what are you doing, man? He's brought so much money and attention to that tour. He has lined your pockets with cash. People have a short-term memory when it comes to situations like that. But in a way, is it good that you're talking about it? Yes, but I don't feel it's talking about it in a good way. I think it's a point of agitation. It's like, if her teammates are going to start fighting for whatever, I'm not going to watch it. I don't really watch it anyway, but it drives me nuts when they won't protect her. It drives me nuts.
I didn't watch the play. No one went over to help her up or anything at all?
No, just knocked her down. Just knocked her down. I mean, there should be fights there. Here's after the game, Caitlin.
We saw the play in the third quarter where Carter kind of decked you. Mm-hmm. How do you respond to that and stay within yourself?
I feel like I'm just at the point where you accept it and don't retaliate. Like, you know, just let them hit you. Be what it is. Don't let it get inside your head and know it's coming. I think at this point, like, I know I'm going to take a couple hard shots a game. It is what it is, I guess. I mean,
that's something you tell your kids, right, when they go to school and they're getting bullied. You don't sit there and say, hey, just take it, man. Just take it. No, it's about punching back, man.
She's a rookie. She's been playing basketball for like 9 straight months.
She's the leading scorer in basketball history.
Yeah, but like sometimes you got to take your lumps if you're a rookie.
No, like, not like that, man.
I don't know. Sometimes you do.
She's the bell cow, man. She's what's making the money. Do you remember Matt Barnes?
Yeah,
former NBA player on Instagram. But you remember, he's an enforcer kind of, but Matt Barnes played. This is what he had to say about it.
I mean, throughout the season, she's been getting beat up. Hard screens, elbows, knocked down. It is what it is. She's not the first. She won't be the last. My issue and my question is, where the f*** are her teammates at? Where are y'all at? Where are the rest of the Indiana Fever at? I've seen a couple girls smirk when she's got knocked down, half-assed to pick her up. Like, y'all supposed to protect the asset, protect the star. And all this is the team. She's the star. You always protect your star. I was someone who protected the stars. You from Kobe, CP, Blake, list goes on. It's going to be a problem because you guys are supposed to be a family. And you wonder why you sit at the bottom of the league right now is because y'all don't protect each other, man. Coach don't do shit about it. Players don't do shit about it. Y'all should be ashamed of it. But the rest of the league is going to continue to test her. And that's what they're supposed to do. It's your guys' job to have her back and have each other's back. Got to do better, ladies.
That's right, man. Well, throw some elbows, man. Knock some ass down.
They're at the bottom of the standings, not because they're not a good teammate.
But you saw the hip check.
They're not good players.
I don't think they're good teammates. You see the hip check?
I saw the hip check. I didn't see the aftermath.
That girl did deserve to be punched. Did.
Sometimes you got to haul off and hit somebody.
I mean, I love when baseball has their fights, even though a lot of them are just posing and hold me back. But
isn't that what Carrington said? Carrington, I think, when I was driving in today, he said that they should, or Caitlin, he's like, hit somebody back.
They should. He's 100%
right. She's like, take your suspension, take your lumps in the media, and then they'll stop probably.
Yeah, I mean, once you fight back, people don't do it. But you don't tell your kid if he's getting bullied, do you? Or she's getting bullied. You don't say, sit there and take it. Just take those punches. No, it's about punching back. This is what Chinity Carter said, which who the hell's ever heard of her before this incident?
She's a very good player.
She says, besides three-point shooting, what does she bring to the table, man? How about money, aircraft flights, attention, sold-out arenas? And people know her name, not yours.
They obviously don't like the attention that she's getting.
But why, though? I mean, she is the reason they're making money. Why? I mean, Why wouldn't you? I mean, you don't have to sit there and praise her or whatever. But just understand the reality of the situation. She brings eyeballs.
These are like veteran players that have been doing it for like 4, 5, 6, 7, 10 years.
But sometimes you just have to accept it. It's like the Chiefs. They're always put in prime time.
Yeah, but nobody accepts it.
But they're the ones that do the Amazon first game when it was on Thursday night. They're doing the Netflix first game. They did the Peacock game. They're the bell cow for the NFL, but they've accepted it.
But we see this in football. We see guys trying to tee off on rookie quarterbacks all the time.
But you see linemen protect them. You don't just sit there and watch your teammate lay on the ground.
Yeah, I'm not saying that her teammates are doing her any favors. But I'm just saying,
if you were out and somebody punched you, we'd be pissed. I think a lot of us would be pissed. Go, what the hell are you doing, man? Mm-hmm. And you'd want us to fight back for you.
Yeah, that's right.
No, that ain't the deal.
Her teammates should have her back.
They should, 100%. I mean, Matt Barnes is 100% right about that.
I agree with that part, but they're going to go after Caitlin Clark because they don't like her.
But she's done nothing. That's the thing. I mean, she's not caught. I mean, she talks some junk. I mean, I get that. But she really hasn't done anything but line your pockets. I mean, if somebody is bringing money to you and a reason why this sport is people are talking about it that aren't WNBA fans, because of her. Just understand that's what it is. Just enjoy it. Embrace it. The Tiger Woods effect, man. Embrace it. He puts money in your pocket.
I just don't think that's what the top athlete's really thinking. They're thinking, like, I'm going to try to get this person.
But, man, you watch hockey. We sat there and talked about the Stanley Cup, you know, before this. You don't hit stars, man. When you do, they pay for it.
I mean, you can't even look at a goalie after they call a whistle.
We've seen the Rangers and Devils, like, fight as soon as the whistle plays. As soon as the puck drop, they start fighting. It was like a year ago, they start fighting immediately. I mean, they take care of their own.
The WNBA historically has been a very physical league, too. Like, they've got a lot of rivalry there, so.
Start punching people, man. I don't think anybody'd have a problem with that. Let's get some violence in sports. Get some violence in that sport.
It seems like there will be some.
There will be. There'll be some retribution. Anyway, we'll talk to Pete Sweeney at Arrowhead Pride. We'll talk Kansas City Chiefs next.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
And welcome back to After Hours. Jay Pinkley, Grant Nicholson producing the operation. Time to talk some Kansas City Chiefs with the one and only editor-in-chief, arrowheadpride.com, a man that's joined me on every Chiefs post-game show throughout this incredible, incredible run. Pete Sweeney. What's up, Pete?
Hey, Jay. It's been a while. Good to talk to you.
It's been a minute, but it seems like it's fast, man. It's just like we're just talking after the Super Bowl and everything and talking about the Chiefs, the playoff run, and here they are basically on a month. Next month, they'll be in training camp up in St. Joe. The last round of voluntary OTAs starts tomorrow. And then, of course, one more set with the mandatory mini camp coming up. But you'll have your view, Wednesday, the 5th or 6th?
It's Thursday this week. So okay. We did Wednesday the first week, then two Thursdays in a row. And what's nice is the NFL requires media to be available for the full mandatory minicamp. So we'll get Thursday. It'll be a quick look. Usually that last day OTAs is pretty quick, and then we'll get the full day of mandatory minicamp.
What's impressed you so far, Pete, when you've been out there? I was reading your story on arrowheadpride.com, and you had gave your thoughts about the Pro Football Focus article about Rashee Rice considered the X factor for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah. It's just tough to take away anything, you know, definitive from these OTA looks. I mean, Andy Reid is always calling it a passing camp, but in the frame of that, you know, you look for, well, who's connecting with Patrick Mahomes, and Kadarius Toney hasn't been out of either of the two looks that we've been at, and so some of the younger guys have gotten opportunities, and I've noted that it seemed to me like Mahomes has this chemistry from last year with this really big roster hopeful and Nico Remigio, and so he's somebody that I have my eyes on. I also think it's worth noting, just from talking to the coaches and getting an opportunity to have a conversation with Dave Tope, this whole new kickoff rule is going to change the game. There might be a 53rd player that would have never made it in years prior, but because this kickoff is so different and is going to affect the game so much, the Chiefs may keep somebody that, again, they maybe wouldn't have kept at the end of the roster for this year. You know, you talk about a guy like Lewis Reese-Zammit. If he had come any other year, he would be at a significant, significant disadvantage to make the roster because he needs to learn football. But this seems like a rugby play, the XFL kickoff, so I think it really has opened the door for him Still a long shot to me, but his chances are better this year than they would have been any other year.
Yeah, and he'll make the team because they'll have 17 roster spots on the practice squad because you can with international players like that. So, I mean, he's listed as the first returner at this point. Don't forget Denerick Prince was listed as the first returner last year before training camp. But, yes, this new kickoff rule is going to be interesting. You know, Justin Reed, you know, guys like that play safety, can kick. I'm still worried about that ball landing in the landing zone, though, because if not, it goes out to the 40. I just wonder at what point will they be like, eh, we'll just kick it to the end zone. You can have it at the 30, and we'll trust our defense at that point. But Dave Tobe went and said they went back and watched the XFL back before the United Football League. Now they went back and 25 to 40% of the time, Dave threw out the number, said that the kicker was involved in either the tackle or attempting the tackle. And I know some teams have their tackles, you know, in safety drills and linebacker drills and everything else to learn how to tackle. I don't know if that's the best way to do it because at the end of the game, you need those guys. And I think the combine, it will come up, you know, questions are, can you kick? I'll bring up Jaden Hicks, for example. They drafted in the fourth round, the safety. His first sport he played was soccer. So it means, okay, this guy can kick and we'll see if he'll kick in the future. But it is interesting, like, this whole landing zone and what they're doing. But I don't blame them not having your kicker make tackles.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to predict because we have no historical data on what this is going to be like. But I think throughout, like, the beginning to the middle, maybe even to the you know, the third quarter, you'll see kickers and maybe they'll be kicking it off and trying to gain yardage that way where, again, maybe you're kicking it almost like a squib so that if they return it, you can get them within their own 20-yard line if you grow to yourself to be that confident in what you're doing there. And I think that's why you're seeing Justin Reed and Reece Zammon. And that's another point that I think is worth noting as well. They don't want Harrison Butker getting hurt on these plays. Well, they probably don't want Justin Reed getting hurt on these plays either. So I think that helps Reece Zammon in a sense of maybe getting an opportunity to be in the 53 if he does prove that he can kick and return. Just such a weapon in that sense. And I think the strategy of it will go if, let's say, the Chiefs were to have a 10 to 14 point lead in the fourth quarter, which me and you know, Jay, as great as they are, is rare. Usually it's like 4 points and you're nail biting.
Yeah.
But I would tend to think in that scenario, you're right. You know, it would just be a touchback situation. Why risk any kind of return? You might as well just give up the yardage and try to drain the clock that way. And so will be really intriguing. It is definitely going to be a game changer, and I tend to think whoever masters the strategy behind it first will have a significant advantage, at least for the first half of the season until the rest of the league catches up.
Well, I've been careful with, you know, you watch a guy in camp and the last couple of years. Justin Ross got a lot of the treatment last year. I feel that LRZ is getting that, Zammit's getting that attention this year. People are talking about it. Amy Reid said, hey, man, you got to learn to run a little bit lower. You got to lower yourself down. You can't run up and be a big target in that situation. These are things you'll learn once you get hit. And I think we're all going to be watching that. You know, can he adjust? The physicality we know is there. Have you seen anything out of him that you're saying, okay, I see NFL in this guy? Because we've seen more and more teams do it. Buffalo Bills just signed a wrestler. Two-time wrestling champions, never played football. So other teams have been doing this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a timing thing, and, you know, it's going to be being able to work with the quarterback on the count and have some confidence in doing that. Like, you just think about who he's playing with. Guys that have been playing football since they were in the fourth grade, and now all of a sudden, you know, you're thrown into the fire to try to figure this out and not only do it, but do it at the highest level in the world. And so I still tend to think, all things considered, even everything that I mentioned, that practice squad does seem like the most likely scenario, and that'll give him a year to, like, really learn the game under the one of the best head coaches of all time, and then maybe it's something that you look at for next year. But who knows? I mean, I could be wrong about that.
But he can be pulled up, what, four times, Pete? Four times he can be pulled up?
Yeah. And you know, you might see that later in the year. I wonder, though. I mean, there have been times where you see in training camp in the preseason, someone becomes undeniable in the sense that, you know, he's played so well that the rest of the league might claim him. And so that isn't out of the question. We'll just have to see how it plays out. And that is certainly going to be a storyline I think a lot of people will be paying attention to.
You haven't got a real good look at Worthy at this point because of the hamstring, have you?
No, nothing. Unfortunately, I was out for the rookie minicamp, and me, myself, I've been at the OTA looks, but ever since the first OTA look, he's been out of the mix, and Now, I wonder if we do see him even at the mandatory minicamp. I feel like the hamstrings is always something that this particular regime is cautious about, and you don't blame them for that. If a hamstring gets injured, it can cost you a significant amount of time. And so we'll see. We'll see if he does even suit up for next week. I tend to think maybe the next time we see him, just out of caution, is training camp.
What have you seen from Hollywood Brown? Are you buying the hype of Hollywood Brown? I mean, this is a former first-round pick. They only had one first-round pick on offense that won a Super Bowl, believe it or not. Mahomes was the only first-round pick as a starter on offense. Hollywood Brown, a former first-round pick. But a lot of people have high expectations. I'm not expecting him to sign that big contract 1 year. Even Brett Veach said before the draft that, hey, we have Hollywood Brown for a year. I fully expect it just to be a year. But how big has he been as far as this receiver rotation?
Yeah, again, we're getting one look a week, so we got to see him a little bit that first week. Wasn't available the second week, and does seem to have the chemistry down with Patrick Mahomes. Some of that stuff that you've seen in the videos was carrying over to the OTAs, where he was able to make this one-handed catch downfield. I just think this is what the Chiefs have been missing as far as being able to stretch the field and really, I think, opening things up again for Travis Kelce, something that they had in their repertoire when Tyreek Hill was a member of the team. And should Worthy be okay and learn fast and be good to go? I mean, you're talking about two really, really fast players who can catch the football downfield. And I just think this offense, if those guys click, and so far so good, and we're really early here, but so far so good, it might look more of the offense of, you know, those 18 and 19, 20 seasons than stuff we've seen recently where the Chiefs have had to learn how to nickel and dime and play in the intermediate. You haven't seen as many explosive plays. That probably would change if these guys prove that they can be a threat early and there is a connection downfield, because you're not going to have a lot of these defenders cheating up and making sure that Travis Kelce's curbed, because you'll have two other threats on the football field.
Haven't really talked to you since the draft, Pete. Just your overall thoughts on this draft. Which rookie, I know we discussed it on Character Concerns, which rookie gets the most snaps? Obviously, if Kingsley wins the left tackle battle, he would get the most snaps. Xavier Worthy's going to get his. I fully expect Jaden Hicks to get quite a bit in that safety rotation as well.
Yeah, I kind of think Kingsley's going to win the job. It's a higher pick than Wanya Morris. I just kind of have been following just the way that the Chiefs have talked about Wanya, even at the start. And never disparaging his name or anything like that. But they were never really willing to say, even before they drafted Kingsley, that Wanya was going to be the guy. And kind of raise your eyebrows a little bit, because really he was the only option on the team. Now that Donovan Smith is still a free agent, still out there, by the way, we might get a chance to talk to him. At the end of next week, when they do have that red carpet ceremony, I expect him to be there for the ring, and we'll see if...
That's next week already? Yeah.
That time, yeah. Next Thursday, I believe, after the mandatory minicamp. So I do wonder if this is Kingsley's job to lose. You know, higher pick, they do feel like he can compete with Wanya Morris, and I just think that bloodline that he has, you know, within successful NFL players around the NFL and being related to these guys and some of the things he was able to do. He's a left tackle, a natural left tackle. And so I just tend to think he's going to give Wanya a run for his money. And then, you know, if he were to win that job, he's playing 100% of the snaps, right, Jay? So to me, that's the safest answer. And I think we've seen Andy Reid really ease younger players. And same thing with Steve Spagnuolo. I mean, eventually they can play, but they get eased in. And so, to me, Kingsley is the safest answer there, because at this stage, super, super early, I like Kingsley to win that job.
Do you have a favorite? Because I know the year before, I liked Shamari Connor. I like these off-the-radar type, you know, draft picks they make. I love the fourth round when they get the tight end, Jared Wiley from TCU, and also Jaden Hicks, who really slid in the draft. And it's kind of hard to believe, because Dane Brugler had him as his best safety, had him as a 39th best prospect. Daniel Jeremiah had him as a 78th. Best prospect. I'm excited about Jaden Hicks about as much as anybody.
Yeah, I think for me the most intriguing thing is the wide receiver. Not so much that I am feeling one way or another strongly about Xavier Worthy. I just think it's been a while. It's been a long time since we saw Brett Veach take a big swing on an offensive player in the first round. And to me, the storyline behind it is my favorite. Like, I'm very curious to see if this guy's going to pan out, because, you know, he does do a lot of things well. We know about the speed, faster 40 time than Tyreek Hill. The Chiefs really do like him as a player and a route runner. But, you know, from a pure prospect standpoint. He's a bit undersized. That you want 165, 170.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how that is going to translate to the NFL. And, you know, even despite the Hollywood Brown signing, and, you know, eventually I think after whatever suspension it is, Rashee Rice will be back. You're going to need Xavier Worthy to contribute in some fashion. I think especially if you want this offense to really click, really be among the upper echelon of the league like it used to be. And, you know, I just wonder how soon he can be a factor. Is it, you know, the first quarter of the season? Is it, you know, the second half? Will he be as quick to learn as Rashee Rice was? That to me is the most intriguing and makes it my favorite storyline.
I think one of the storylines is about this defense and how good it's been. I've likened it to the Royals to some extent early on where people weren't really buying into it. Then all of a sudden we're in June and they have a great record. Because this defense last year, it wasn't a storyline how good it was. It was what's wrong with the offense. And then finally right. I felt the defense got a little bit of that. Well, I think they've always had that swagger, but this is different. I mean, they're going in with. And welcome back to After Hours, Jay Binkley. Grant Nicholson producing the operation. Time to talk some Kansas City Chiefs with the one and only editor-in-chief, ArrowheadPride.com, a man that's joined me on every Chiefs postgame show throughout this incredible, incredible run. Pete Sweeney. What's up, Pete?
Hey, Jay. It's been a while. Good to talk to you.
It's been a minute. It seems like it's fast, man. It's just like we're just talking after the Super Bowl and everything and talking about the Chiefs, the playoff run, and here they are basically on a month. Next month, they'll be in training camp up in St. Joe. The last round of voluntary OTAs starts tomorrow. And then, of course, one more set with the mandatory mini camp coming up. But you'll have your view, Wednesday the 5th or 6th?
It's Thursday this week. So okay. We did Wednesday the first week, then two Thursdays in a row. And what's nice is the NFL requires media to be available for the full mandatory mini camp. So we'll get Thursday. It'll be a quick look. Usually that last day OTAs is pretty quick, and then we'll get the full day of mandatory minicamp.
What's impressed you so far, Pete, when you've been out there? I was reading your story on arrowheadpride.com, and you had gave your thoughts about the Pro Football Focus article about Rashee Rice considered the X factor for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah. It's just tough to take away anything, you know, definitive from these OTA looks. I mean, Andy Reid is always calling it a passing camp, but in the frame of that, you know, you look for, well, who's connecting with Patrick Mahomes? And Kadarius Toney hasn't been out of either of the two looks that we've been at. And so some of the younger guys have gotten opportunities, and I've noted that it seemed to me like Mahomes has this chemistry from last year with this really big roster hopeful and Nico Remigio, and so he's somebody that I have my eyes on. I also think it's worth noting just from talking to the coaches and getting an opportunity to have a conversation with Dave Tope, this whole new kickoff rule is going to change the game. There might be a 53rd player that would have never made it in years prior, but because this kickoff is so different and is going to affect the game so much, the Chiefs may keep somebody that, again, they maybe wouldn't have kept at the end of the roster for this year. You know, you talk about a guy like Lewis Reese-Zammit. If he had come any other year, he would be at a significant disadvantage to make the roster because he needs to learn football. But this seems like a rugby play, the XFL kickoff, so I think it really has opened the door for him. Still a long shot to me, but his chances are better this year than they would have been any other year.
Yeah, and he'll make the team because they'll have 17 roster spots on the practice squad because you can with international players like that. So, I mean, he's listed as the first returner at this point. Don't forget Denaric Prince was listed as the first returner last year before training camp. But yes, this new kickoff rule is going to be interesting. You know, Justin Reed, you know, guys like that that play safety can kick. I'm still worried about that ball landing in the landing zone, though, because if not, it goes out to the 40. I just wonder at what point will they be like, we'll just kick it to the end zone. You can have it at the 30, and we'll trust our defense at that point. But Dave Tobe went and said they went back and watched the XFL back before the United Football League. Now they went back and 25 to 40% of the time, Dave threw out the number, said that the kicker was involved in either the tackle or attempting the tackle. And I know some teams have their tackles, you know, in safety drills and linebacker drills and everything else to learn how to tackle. I don't know if that's the best way to do it because at the end of the game, you need those guys. And I think the combine, it will come up. You know, questions are, can you kick? I'll bring up Jaden Hicks, for example. They drafted in the fourth round, the safety. His first sport he played was soccer. So it means, okay, this guy can kick, and we'll see if he'll kick in the future. But it is interesting, like, this whole landing zone and what they're doing. But I don't blame them not having your kicker make tackles.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's hard to predict because we have no historical data on what this is going to be like. But I think throughout, like, the beginning to the middle, maybe even to the third quarter, you'll see kickers and maybe they'll be kicking it off and trying to gain yardage that way, where, again, maybe you're kicking it almost like a squib so that if they return it, you can get them within their own 20-yard line if you grow to yourself to be that confident in what you're doing there. And I think that's why you're seeing Justin Reed and Reece Amon. And that's another point that I think is worth noting as well. They don't want Harrison Butker getting hurt on these plays. Well, they probably don't want Justin Reed getting hurt on these plays either. So I think that helps Reece Amon in a sense of maybe getting an opportunity to be on the 53 if he does prove that he can kick and return. Just such a weapon in that sense. And I think the strategy of it will go if, let's say, the Chiefs were to have a 10-14-point lead in the fourth quarter, which me and you know, Jay, as great as they are, is rare. Usually it's like 4 points and you're nail-biting.
Yeah.
But I would tend to think in that scenario, you're right. You know, it would just be a touchback situation. Why risk any kind of return? You might as well just give up the yardage and try to drain the clock that way. And so will be really intriguing. It is definitely going to be a game changer. And I tend to think whoever masters the strategy behind it first will have a significant advantage, at least for the first half of the season until the rest of the league catches up.
Well, I've been careful with, you know, you watch a guy in camp and the last couple of years, Justin Ross got a lot of the treatment last year. I feel that LRZ is getting that, Zammit's getting that attention this year. People are talking about Amy Reid said, hey, man, you got to learn to run a little bit lower. You got to lower yourself down. You can't run up and be a big target in that situation. These are things you'll learn once you get hit. And I think we're all going to be watching that. You know, can he adjust? The physicality we know is there. Have you seen anything out of him that you're saying, okay, I see NFL in this guy? Because we've seen more and more teams do it. Buffalo Bills just signed a wrestler, 2-time wrestling champion. He's never played football. So other teams have been doing this as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a timing thing, and, you know, it's going to be being able to work with the quarterback on the count and have some confidence in doing that. Like, you just think about who he's playing with. Guys that have been playing football since they were in the fourth grade, and now all of a sudden, you know, you're thrown into the fire to try to figure this out and not only do it, but do it at the highest level in the world. And so I still tend to think, all things considered, even everything that I mentioned, that practice squad does seem like the most likely scenario, and that'll give him a year to like really learn the game under the one of the best head coaches of all time, and then maybe it's something that you look at for next year of but who knows? I mean, I could be wrong about that.
But he can be pulled up, what, 4 times, Pete? 4 times he can be pulled up?
Yeah. And you know, you might see that later in the year. I wonder, though. I mean, there have been times where you see in training camp in the preseason someone becomes undeniable in the sense that, you know, he's played so well that the rest of the league might claim him. And so that isn't out of the question. We'll just have to see how it plays out. And that is certainly going to be a storyline I think a lot of people will be paying attention to.
You haven't got a real good look at Worthy at this point because of the hamstring, have you?
No, nothing. Unfortunately, I was out for the rookie minicamp, and me myself, I've been at the OTA looks, but ever since the first OTA look, he's been out of the mix. And now I wonder if we do see him even at the mandatory minicamp. I feel like the hamstrings is always something that this particular regime is cautious about, and you don't blame them for that. If a hamstring gets injured, it can cost you a significant amount of time. And so we'll see. We'll see if he does even suit up for next week. I tend to think maybe the next time we see him, just out of caution, is training camp.
What have you seen from Hollywood Brown? Are you buying the hype of Hollywood Brown? I mean, this is a former first-round pick. They only had one first-round pick on offense that won a Super Bowl, believe it or not. Mahomes was the only first-round pick as a starter on offense. Hollywood Brown, a former first-round pick, but a lot of people with high expectations. I'm not expecting him to sign that big contract 1 year. Even Brett Veach said before the draft that, hey, we have Hollywood Brown for a year. I fully expect it just to be a year, but how big has he been as far as this receiver rotation?
Yeah, again, we're getting one look a week, so we got to see him a little bit that first week, wasn't available the second week, and does seem to have the chemistry down with Patrick Mahomes. Some of that stuff that you've seen in the videos was carrying over to the OTAs where he was able to make this one-handed catch downfield. I just think this is what the Chiefs have been missing as far as being able to stretch the field and really, I think, opening things up again for Travis Kelce, something that they had in their repertoire when Tyreek Hill was a member of the team. And should Worthy be okay and learn fast and be good to go? I mean, you're talking about two really, really fast players who can catch the football downfield. And I just think this offense, if those guys click, and so far so good, I mean, we're really early here, but so far so good, it might look more of the offense of, you know, those 18 and 19, 20 seasons than stuff we've seen recently where the Chiefs have had to learn how to nickel and dime and play in the intermediate. You haven't seen as many explosive plays. That probably would change if these guys prove that they can be a threat early and there is a connection downfield, because you're not going to have a lot of these defenders cheating up and making sure that in Travis Kelce's curbs, because you'll have two other threats on the football field.
I haven't really talked to you since the draft, Pete. Just your overall thoughts on this draft. Which rookie, I know we discussed it on Character Concerns, which rookie gets the most snaps? Obviously, if Kingsley wins the left tackle battle, he would get the most snaps. Xavier Worthy's going to get his. I fully expect Jaden Hicks to get quite a bit in that safety rotation as well.
Yeah, I kind of think Kingsley's going to win the job. It's a higher pick than Wanya Morris. I just kind of have been following just the way that the Chiefs have talked about Wanya, even at the start. And never disparaging his name or anything like that. But they were never really willing to say, even before they drafted Kingsley, that Wanya was going to be the guy. And kind of raised your eyebrows a little bit, because really he was the only option on the team. Now that Donovan Smith is still a free agent, still out there, by the way, we might get a chance to talk to him. Yeah. At the end of next week, when they do have that red carpet ceremony, I expect him to be there for the ring, and we'll see if...
That's next week already? Yeah.
That time, yeah. Next Thursday, I believe, after the mandatory minicamp. So I do wonder if this is Kingsley's job to lose. You know, higher pick, they do feel like he can compete with Wanya Morris, and I just think that bloodline that he has, you know, within successful NFL players around the NFL and being related to these guys and some of the things he was able to do. He's a left tackle, a natural left tackle. And so I just tend to think he's going to give Wanya a run for his money. And then, you know, if he were to win that job, he's playing 100% of the snaps, right, Jay? So to me, that's the safest answer. And I think we've seen Andy Reid really ease younger players. And same thing with Steve Spagnuolo. I mean, eventually they can play, but they get eased in. And so, to me, Kingsley is the safest answer there, because at this stage, super, super early, I like Kingsley to win that job.
Do you have a favorite? Because I know the year before, I liked Shamari Connor. I like these off-the-radar type, you know, draft picks they make. I love the fourth round when they get the tight end, Jared Wiley from TCU, and also Jaden Hicks, who really slid in the draft. And it's kind of hard to believe, because Dane Brugler had him as best safety, had him as a 39th best prospect. Daniel Jeremiah had him as a 78th. Best prospect. I'm excited about Jaden Hicks about as much as anybody.
Yeah, I think for me the most intriguing thing is the wide receiver. Not so much that I am feeling one way or another strongly about Xavier Worthy. I just think it's been a while. It's been a long time since we saw Brett Veach take a big swing on an offensive player in the first round. And to me, the storyline behind it is my favorite. Like, I'm very curious to see if this guy's going to pan out, because, you know, he does do a lot of things well. We know about the speed, faster 40 time than Tyreek Hill. The Chiefs really do like him as a player and a route runner. But, you know, from a pure prospect standpoint, he's a bit undersized. You know, 165, 170.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how that is going to translate to the NFL. And, you know, even despite the Hollywood Brown signing, and, you know, eventually I think after whatever suspension it is, Rashee Rice will be back. You're going to need Xavier Worthy to contribute in some fashion. I think especially if you want this offense to really click, really be among the upper echelon of the league like it used to be. And, you know, I just wonder how soon he can be a factor. Is it, you know, the first quarter of the season? Is it, you know, the second half? Will he be as quick to learn as Rashee Rice was? That, to me, is the most intriguing and makes it my favorite storyline.
I think one of the storylines is about this defense and how good it's been. I've likened it to the Royals to some extent early on, where people weren't really buying into it. Then all of a sudden we're in June and they have a great record. Because this defense last year, it wasn't a storyline how good it was. It was what's wrong with the offense. And then finally, right, I felt the defense got a little bit of that. Well, I think they've always had that swagger, but this is different. I mean, they're going in with high expectations now about being a top five defense in the NFL.
Yeah, and, you know, you're doing it without one of the best defensive players in the NFL. You know, I know that the interest in him from a trade standpoint, like Jerry Sneed, maybe wasn't as strong as we thought. I think because
GM jobs are fleeting, like coach jobs. I think a lot of GMs were out there worried about some of the medical stuff, and that drove his price down. But, you know, you listen to the Chiefs coaches talk about Legarrette and how difficult it's going to be to replace him. Under-talked about, I think, not to say they haven't really loaded up at the defensive back position. You think they could figure it out. But it is not only those high expectations, but it's doing so without one of your most important pieces, you know, if not the second most important piece behind Chris Jones. And so Trent McDuffie, as great as he was last year, I think he's going to have to continue that. And you're really going to have one of these defensive backs come out of the woodwork to be that second cornerback. It seems to me like the Chiefs are favoring Shamari Connor or Nick Jones for that slot position. But I just wonder who is going to really take that step and seize the job. I mean, we've seen Joshua Williams and Jalen Watson rotate throughout these past couple of years. I think ideally the Chiefs would like to see one of them be that guy who's the definitive starter. And to me, that's something else to watch as we get to training.
Well, the 33rd team had an article out where they had Joshua Williams being one of the four breakout players defensively in the NFL, you know, doing a lot of that Snead role. Do you think the Chiefs will miss Snead, or do you think they made the right decision going forward with that? Obviously, you can't pay everybody, but then again, did you get the best out of Legarrette Snead, and it's only downhill from here?
Yeah, it's tough seeing Snead go. He was a really fun player to watch, and I think he really developed into this shutdown corner, and you know, that's hard to do in the NFL. Now, that being said, you think about Darrell Revis and Jalen Ramsey and their ability to do that. That doesn't last all that long. You know, that's a 2 or 3 year thing, and then they could still be a great cornerback. That whole shutdown thing, it is also fleeting. I mentioned used that word before as I was talking about GM jobs. But so, you know, you think about what this defense is, and I don't think you could have paid Chris Jones and Legarrette Snead. And I just think if you're having to choose which player could you extract and feel like your chances to be a top five defense are still possible, still the same. I think if you remove Chris Jones, you're probably looking at, man, if we can be 10th in the league without Chris Jones, we're feeling good. I think with Chris Jones still on the roster, even without Legarrette Snead, you still feel like top five is possible, especially, as you mentioned, if Joshua Williams breaks out, if one of these younger defensive backs that, you know, we haven't really gotten to see in a ton, like a Nazi Johnson, rebounds from the injury well and is able to replace some of that defensive production of Snead. You feel good about it. Jones is a one-of-one player, and not to say that Legarrette Snead isn't the elite, he isn't unique, but I feel like you can manage and use a couple different players to replace Legarrette Snead where, in a sense, especially with Aaron Donald retired, Chris Jones is irreplaceable.
And the defensive line and the edge rushers are helping him out. Like, I mean, they went from 55 sacks to 57 the last 2 years. They've been second in the NFL for two straight years. That helps the secondary, man, because they're getting to the quarterback, so it only makes them better. And I fully expect the Chiefs still on this trend of getting to the quarterback.
Yeah, and you know, you nailed it as well. It's a very hard thing to quantify in the sense that, you know, there's no stats necessarily like that. But, you know, the fact that you have big Chris Jones and George Karlaftis and some of these younger players going in and getting after the quarterback, you know, Charles Omenihu, when he was healthy, certainly, it speeds up the clock, and that always helps defensive backs. And so it all kind of goes together in that way, and just to keep an elite player. And really, you know, when you think about roster building, there's a lot of great edge rushers. When you talk about game-wrecking defensive tackles, there's probably less than 10 in the NFL. And so I think that's probably the way they were looking at it. Really hard to replace if you get rid of Chris Jones, so they keep him on the roster.
Great stuff, Pete. It's always good talking to you. We'll be talking real games here soon, so can't wait.
Yeah, can't wait for that. Talk to you soon, Jay.
All right, my man. Take care. Pete Sweeney right there, editor-in-chief, arrowheadpride.com. We'll react to what Pete said next.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
Welcome back, Jay Binkley, Grant Nicholson. Text line 913-586-7610, the Jay Southland Tow Service text line. Nico Remigio will be this year's camp guy. He is getting a lot of run. He's on practice squad last year, undrafted, but Nico will get, seriously, Justin Ross. I think Zammit, the rugby player, will get a lot of the Justin Ross treatment. Be camp guy.
You think Reese Zammit, you think he's hot? Dusty thinks he's hot. I'm serious. Dusty thinks he's good looking.
I mean, he's going to be the camp guy. People are obviously going to be talking about him, you know, on kickoffs. I think kickoffs are being an interesting thing to see up in St. Joe. The landing zone, It's not going to be that end of the practice deal where nobody really pays attention to what's going on with special teams. They're lining up to get their autographs of offense and defense, but they always do that at the last. But I think it's actually more important this year. I think the left tackle will be a huge camp battle. Wanye Morris, that, you know, he said he needs some work. Four starts last year. It'll be him and Kingsley's battle. I think eventually maybe Wanye moves over to the right side. Juwan Taylor here for the next couple of years. He'll be there right now, but they'll move him around. So that's camp battle. I think these wide receivers, how they're going to shake out is Xavier Worthy, that you really haven't seen much at this point, step up and be that guy on the opposite of Hollywood Brown and have that speed that opens up the middle for Travis Kelce. So I'm looking forward to that, and the landing zone will be in. There's not a ton of storylines because this team is basically set.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a punter battle. But
you think there's a real battle? You don't think it's just going to be Ariza?
Well, they signed Rekow from BYU. He's 6'5", 235 pounds, and he went to BYU, which I think does make a little bit of a difference.
It is weird that there's a lot of special teams focus this year of all the things to be watching.
Well, that's an important part of the game.
Especially with the new kickoff rules. It could be really weird.
I'm actually looking forward to it. I know it's kind of weird, and we had to get used to the landing zone, but, you know, the graphics from TV will have the landing zone out there and which balls are going to land in there. You definitely don't want to kick it out of it because that gives them the ball at the 40.
I hope it's good. I hope it's a good change, so we're hoping.
I hope so. You're getting excited about football at this point? I know you are with K-State, but...
Oh, yeah.
They're going to hit the over-under 9.5 wins.
As soon as basketball and hockey stops, then your mind starts to wander to football, for sure.
Well, the power rankings from ESPN came out, and they had Kansas, believe it or not, as the top-rated team in the Big 12. I think it's going to be Kansas State, Oklahoma State, and I believe a dark horse will be West Virginia.
You don't think there's no Utah love there?
Utah's going to be good. It depends on Jordan Rising, how much he gives him. Cam Rising was hurt last year. We'll see what he does this year. I love the running game of Kansas State. I mean, I just love Kansas State to win this conference.
Well, the backfield could be pretty wild. When you've got talented runners, Avery Johnson, DJ Giddens, Dylan Edwards.
You taking the over on 9.5?
Pretty wild. Sure, why not?
Isn't that what it said? It said at 9.5.
I think so.
The under is the favorite at this point.
I take the over. Why not? They can win 10 games.
We'll go back to some college football coming up next. But Josh Vernier talking Kansas City Royals and the big series in Cleveland next.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.
Welcome back. Jay Binkley, Grant Nicholson. Text line 913-586-7610. The Jay Southland Tow Service text line. Nico Remigio will be this year's camp guy. He is getting a lot of run. He's on practice squad last year, undrafted, but Nico will get... Seriously, Justin Ross. I think Zammit, the rugby player, will get a lot of the Justin Ross treatment. Be camp guy.
You think Reese Zammit, you think he's hot? Dusty thinks he's hot. I'm serious. Dusty thinks he's good looking.
I mean, yeah, he's going to be the camp guy. People are obviously going to be talking about him, you know, on kickoffs. I think kickoffs are being an interesting thing to see up in St. Joe. The landing zone. It's not going to be that end of the practice deal where nobody really pays attention to what's going on with special teams. They're lining up to get their autographs of offense and defense, but they always do that at the last. But I think it's actually more important this year. I think the left tackle will be a huge camp battle. Wanye Morris, that, you know, he said he needs some work. Four starts last year. It'll be him and Kingsley's battle. I think eventually maybe Wanye moves over to the right side. Juwan Taylor here for the next couple of years. He'll be there right now, but they'll move him around. So that's camp battle. I think these wide receivers, how they're going to shake out is Xavier Worthy, that you really haven't seen much at this point, step up and be that guy on the opposite of Hollywood Brown and have that speed that opens up the middle for Travis Kelce. So I'm looking forward to that, and the landing zone will be in. There's not a ton of storylines because this team is basically set.
Yeah, I mean...
There's a punter battle. But
you think there's a real battle? You don't think it's just going to be... Ariza?
Well, they signed Rekow from BYU. He's 6'5", 235 pounds, and he went to BYU, which I think does make a little bit of a difference.
It is weird that there's a lot of special teams focus this year of all the things to be watching.
Well, that's an important part of the game.
Especially with the new kickoff rules. It could be really weird.
I'm actually looking forward to it. I know it's kind of weird, and we had to get used to the landing zone, but, you know, the graphics from TV will have the landing zone out there and which balls are going to land in there. You definitely don't want to kick it out of it because that gives them the ball at the 40.
I hope it's good. I hope it's a good change, so we're hoping.
I hope so. You're getting excited about football at this point? I know you are with K-State, but...
Oh, yeah.
They're going to hit the over-under 9.5 wins.
As soon as basketball and hockey stops, then your mind starts to wander to football, for sure.
Well, the power rankings from ESPN came out, and they had Kansas, believe it or not, as the top-rated team in the Big 12. I think it's going to be Kansas State, Oklahoma State, and I believe a dark horse will be West Virginia.
You don't think there's no Utah love there?
Utah's going to be good. It depends on Jordan Rising, how much he gives him. Cam Rising was hurt last year. We'll see what he does this year. I love the running game of Kansas State. I mean, I just love Kansas State to win this conference.
Well, the backfield could be pretty wild when you've got talented runners, Avery Johnson, DJ Giddens, Dylan Edwards.
You taking the over on 9.5?
Pretty wild. Sure, why not?
Isn't that what it said? It said at 9.5.
I think so.
The under is the favorite at this point.
I take the over. Why not? They can win 10 games.
We'll go back to some college football coming up next. But Josh Vernier talking Kansas City Royals and the big series in Cleveland next.
You're listening to After Hours with Dusty Likens on 610 Sports Radio and the Odyssey app. Brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views.